Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this, my friends, is the Force Center podcast feed. I'm Ken Napsok.
And I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, and this is one of our News and Cues episode. Cues stands for questions, news stands for news. Hello, friends. Hello, Ken.
Hello, friends. Hello there. This is going to be, you know what, Joseph, this is going to be a fun episode because this is a juicy, occasionally clickbaity topic that has some meat to it. And it just makes me, it reminds me of sitting at a bar with you in Vegas talking about Star Wars.
Yeah, this is, I was thinking the exact same thing. Of this is a sitting with a beer in a bar going, what if, wouldn't that be cool? Wow.
Wow is the title of this show. Wouldn't that be cool? Before we get to all the coolness, we're going to remind you that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/forcecenter. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. A little bit later, we'll have our Force Center recommends an audiobook we think you, nay, we want you to try out on us. Star Wars, Life Adventures. That's a weighted question often these days, Joseph. We have to find little joys amongst all the bigger things going on. So how's life? How's Star Wars Adventures?
Yeah, no, life is a difficult challenge, I think, for many people, and understandably so. For myself, I had a pretty good week. Obviously, the big things going on in life are always affecting us, but I finished a draft of a script, and it's a fun ritual for me of when I finish a draft up to, like, I usually do a first draft, then I do a second draft, and then my wife reads it, and then we talk about it, and that was a fun life adventure. If I got a draft to the wife read, talk about it, part of the process, which is always a joy. So I was really happy about that. Star Wars Adventures, I had a lot of Star Wars adventures, but they were all really in service of stuff we were doing for the podcast. Had great fun reading that book, The Lightsaber Collection, that we're going to talk about for the deep dive episode that'll come out this Thursday. That, you know, lightsabers for me are like, they're right at the heart of my Star Wars fandom. So that was just some great total Star Wars nerding out, which I really enjoyed. And the other Star Wars adventure I had was a strangely practical one. For a while now, I have had kind of pseudo designed in my mind a display, kind of not case, but basically, like, I wanted to get someone to build me a hanging frame that had like store pegs so I could put a bunch of action figures on the wall. And I finally accepted. I'm not going to do that anytime soon. So I bought just a cork board.
Yes. The cork board is great. Though now I do want you to have your own KB toy rack in your house.
Oh, yeah, man. If I were ever wealthy and eccentric, I would have basically like, welcome to my Star Wars room that basically looks like an old toy store. And they're all on the racks. But yeah, I know you have cork board. I've seen other people with cork board. And this is sometimes one of those, the perfect shouldn't be the enemy of the good. So like, I bought some cork board. That was my Star Wars adventure. And I'm really looking forward to hanging it up and putting up some of my favorite figures.
Ah, that's great. That's great. Yeah, I mean, here I am as I'm talking to you, staring at a Ratta, staring at a Leia. It's just nice. It's comforting. And that might go to our youths of turning the corner on those convenience stores and toy stores and seeing that wall of figures.
That is right. I want to stare at a Ratta. Yes. Yeah. One other little fun Star Wars adventure, and this is a Mandalorian spoiler. I think for the most part, we're being open with assuming people are caught up with Mandalorian. But again, if you don't want to hear it, you know, fast forward literally a minute because this will be very quick. You and I talked a little bit about each episode we're watching Mandalorian. We're sharing our super inside the bubble reactions, but then having some fun speculating what our partners will react to and how. And watched this most recent episode of Mandalorian with my wife, Sarah. And it was great because she was like, Bo-Katan, oh, yeah, I think I kind of remember her. But, you know, we've watched Clone Wars and Rebels out of order and, you know, all that. But the Ahsoka Tano drop, her jaw just dropped. And it was so great. It was so great to see it in such a pure way of like, what? That's possible? How? What? And she had no idea. She didn't know any of it.
That's great. I did the test too. And this week's episode was very well received, except for one character was, quote, really annoying every time she talks. So we'll see what next week brings.
Very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, that's a good test. That's a good test. So that's a lot. That's a full life in Star Wars Adventure Week for you.
Yeah, it's a pretty full week. How about yourself? What were your life and or Star Wars adventures?
You know, I don't have anything specific. I'd say I am, I feel like Han Solo and Chewie combined in the Echo Base hangar on Hoth. I have been in a office space for the better part of 7 days, roughly from, you know, 4 p.m. till 10 or 11 p.m. at night, doing woodworking. So actually, I feel like Harrison Ford in the 70s before he got cast in things. some friends of mine and I are working on something kind of, we haven't announced yet, but we're building sets and stuff, and I'm not good at that stuff. I'm good at sweeping, Joseph, kind of. So I've learned a lot. I feel as though right now I could build you a wood fence in the front of your yard.
Ooh, can you build me an action figure display hanger? Cause then we could talk.
It would look like, it wouldn't look good. I've learned some new skills. So build a desk for four people, a bar, a brick wall, a faux brick walls set. It is kind of that Han keeping the Falcon going. Like, we just need to get this looking like. And which also a little bit like Mando this past week, not to get too any into spoil details on little plot points. I wasn't wearing a fisherman's sweater though. That was doing it. that's kind of been it. Like, I have not, other than watching and doing the stuff related to Force Center, I haven't had even any life adventures. It's fun, hard work. Hopefully that can pay off, but this year alone, I've learned to cook better, which is something I always kind of wanted to do. And my dad has woodworking and engineering skills, that too, and I did not get that side. I got his build, I did not get his skills. So here in 2020, to kind of, he also is a great cook, so to kind of be able to connect with that side of my life and force myself out of pure just actual need, I need to learn how to be able to hammer better and to succeed. It's worked for me, sir. It's I don't know if that's a Star Wars lesson, but it's some.
I think so. I think a necessity is the parent of woodworking. I think that's true.
That's exactly what Frank Zappa said at one point.
Yes. I took a wood technology class in high school. It's literally called wood technology, and I wasn't great, but the things I made still survive. The bookcase next to me that is loaded up with books and action figures, wood technology back in the day.
I've seen that. I've seen that bookshelf. That's a good shelf.
It's a solid shelf, yeah.
Well, shelf. I had a little mini class of that in eighth grade, and I built a mirror with the New York Yankees baseball team insignia on it. It was so bad you can't see the mirror. Like, it's just like you get half sliver of a mirror behind the logo.
Okay. Well, we'll talk during not Star Wars podcast about, I might want to turn that into a short story. That's a very like Edgar Allan Poe horror story of, I built a mirror where I couldn't see myself.
The telltale mirror, indeed. Star Wars and Life Adventures, it's our chance to catch up, not just with each other, but with all of you out there in the audience. Let's dive into the Star Wars news. I will say, not, quote, a lot of news this week, but a lot to dig into from what we did get. We'll get to merchandise, Mando Monday stuff here in a second, but the big headline reads this, Maul and Talon, Tale of Two Darths. Well, maybe, kind of, sort of. So here's the scoop. I'm going to kind of, as always, kind of recap some stuff, and Joseph will dive in, and feel free, Joseph, to dive in on anything that pops up that you want to talk about while I run through a little bit of things. Paul Duncan has the Star Wars Archives 1999 to 2005 coming out. This will cover the prequels and the special editions. He had the first Star Wars archive book, the 77 to 1983. I am fortunate enough to have it. And I say fortunate because it is a giant, giant, heavy, almost small car sized book that I just have. And it's comforting to just thumb through. And I'm looking forward to this one. I'm going to grab this one too as well. So there's a lot in there. And as often does happen with books, as we know, Joseph, it's coming out soon, which means little clips of the book being posted to Reddit. And this story was originally posted on Reddit. And that link, according to my knowledge, I'm not a Reddit expert, couldn't find it. The links were dead. This has spawned some wonderful clickbait articles. No one on out of it. But we'll just start with the headline here, Joseph. Lucas, quote, plan to use Darth Maul and EU superstar Darth Talon as the main villains in a possible original trilogy follow-up sequel trilogy. A 7, 8, and 9, yes, but a different time, a different era. So let's actually just dive in right to that headline, Joseph, about what that makes you think, feel, wonder, want. Where are you at with that?
Oh, just with what element of it?
Just you're scrolling along. Maybe you're doom scrolling. Maybe you're looking for otter pictures on Twitter. I don't know, whatever. And you see that headline. Lucas planned to use Maul and Darth Talon as the main villains in his episode 7, 8, and 9. Where does your mind go?
Yeah, no, I mean, I was doom scrolling and joy poking on social media, whatever you want to call it. And I saw this and I went through a Star Wars adventure where I needed to fight through the fear and the anger and the negativity to get to the place of joy and hope.
Right. Yes.
Which is, I think, my first reaction, and I don't want to dwell on this because I want to talk about all the fun ideas. I'm always concerned about, as soon as I see a title like that, I'm immediately going to, but where is this actual information from? When did Lucas say it? Who did he say it to? If he's even said it in a modern context, at what point in his own journey is he referring to having come up with this idea? And all that stuff emerged, and we're going to talk about that. So that's my very first thing. It's just like, before I even get into the actual Star Wars ideas, I want to get to the truth of the reporting. And then the other thing for me that was in some of these clickbait articles, some of the social media reaction, not all of it, I am just personally very, very tired of the comparison game. I understand it's a natural thing to do. I have nothing wrong with people picking their favorites. But I'm so interested in the actual ideas that Lucas shared, that so much more interested in the this is what we could have had, or this is what was behind door two. You know, and it's just not as simple as that. It's just not as direct as that. And for me, it at some point, it becomes reductive to only talk about Lucas's ideas in contrast to what the sequel trilogy ended up being.
Yeah.
So
full agree.
Yeah. That honestly, that's my first reaction. And then I get into all the Darth Maul, Darth Talon, interesting, Luke, Leia, all the other stuff we're going to talk about. Very, very intrigued by the actual ideas.
Yeah, well, see, I'm very glad you started there, because I think we try to be honest here, and the Force Center vibe is always referred to as positive, and you and I have discussed both the positive side of being considered positive and the negative side of being considered too positive. I had a similar reaction where I didn't even see, you know, I see it and I just go, whatever. And then I see it's from Paul Duncan's books. I'm like, oh, well, I'm looking forward to this book. That's interesting. And you dig in, and then there's a lot of things in this that I'm like, oh, I love this. This is some great stuff. This was to me never going to be in play for what he eventually handed over to Disney. And I'm dying to one day read what he handed over to Disney. But yeah, it just becomes, it creates, and you and I have to power through sometimes the defensive nature of just kind of, you know, being a human sometimes. If you love something, you might get defensive. We love the sequel trilogy. No secret about that. And so when I see tweets, oh, this would have been so much cooler, I immediately, look what I just did. I get into a mocking tone. I put up my sword. I put up my dukes. And you know, that's a lesson on us. I want to try to be better first before beating anyone else into submission into my ideas, right? You know, like, let me work on it. And once I clicked on these stories and was able to put that aside, this was a very fun story to dig into.
Yeah.
With a lot of possibilities and a lot of good things. So anyways, I all that to say, I think you and I are in a very honest spot, and it's good to share that as in Star Wars fandom this time.
Yeah. And I think for me, I would separate it between, sometimes I get defensive when I see a hot take that I disagree with, but you know, I let that go because it's subjective. If somebody doesn't like a film I like, yeah, that can be frustrating, but opinions are opinions, and that's just fine. That's a part of this, of just like, I like the sequel trilogy, and you know, it's sometimes difficult when people really, really don't. But there's also the, like, we need to look at facts. Like, that's just so incredibly important to me when talking about Star Wars or anything else in the world. We need to check dates. We need to check sources. We need to know that we know what we're talking about. And just for clarity, if people are hearing about this for the first time, this is coming from a relatively recent interview with Lucas. But it's clear that he is talking about ideas that he has had as the sequel trilogy in his mind, you know, changed and morphed, because even part of these ideas that he's describing, he ended up putting in the Clone Wars himself. Mm-hmm. So this was not, yes, this is a recent interview, but this is not him saying, here are all the ideas I handed to Lucasfilm and what they didn't do in 2012.
Right.
And yeah. And just we often use Star Wars Newsnet as a resource. And I thought this article in particular, written by Grant Davis, really broke all that down. The actual, where does this come from? What does it mean in the timeline? I thought this article was really well done. So I wanted to shout that out. Kudos to Grant Davis and Star Wars Newsnet for breaking that all down so well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well said. And a great team over there with, you know, the Resistance broadcast, everything they do over there. And it is for years has been a go-to source of, hey, here's a spot where you can kind of sift through the Star Wars news and dive in as needed. And I definitely agree with you there. A lot of the notes coming, you know, from their insightful article here. So let's run through some of the things here. Stop me if you want to get off the escalator at any point. From this, maybe just me, but I think you touched upon it. Maul's story, just very, very, very similar to what would eventually happen to him in the Clone Wars, including being brought back alive, very upset, and involved in criminal syndicates. It's not as good as your Clone Wars report summaries, but I think it's on there. And also a little bit, you know, these syndicates would kind of work against the stability of what we, you know, call the New Republic. Darth Talon would be his apprentice. Leia would become Chancellor or Supreme Chancellor. Luke would be searching for Order 66 survivors and children with Force potential to rebuild the Jedi Order. Luke and Leia would have to face the new Sith, and Leia would be revealed to be the one to bring balance to the Force. George goes on to discuss that you know, it rebuilding the Republic is harder than starting a rebellion or fighting a war. Kind of that winning and ruling are two different things, kind of concept. And as we talked about, this is not necessarily part of what would eventually be in the treatments he gave Disney for the sequel trilogy. So that's kind of just a summary there. We can start diving on in there. So what do you gravitate towards here? There's a lot to dig into.
Yeah. So I think you were saying, like, if this was something that he had made in the early, not I guess the early 2000s, because he was still making the prequels, but if he had turned right around in the prequels and went and made this, there is nothing that I object to in this. I love all of these ideas as themselves. Like, clearly it is talking about being much closer to Return of the Jedi than the sequel trilogy that ended up being made was. But yeah, so a couple of things that I love. I really, really like all the big picture stuff with Leia. I like the way that Leia is being centered, not just because Leia is a great character, but for me, it pulls together, I think, all these threads of the evolving idea of Star Wars, particularly as I interpret it from the outside of a Lucas perspective. Lucas has so many great quotes going back to the era of A New Hope and the original trilogy of, like, Leia's the actual leader. She's the one who actually understands the government, the politics, the rebellion, the galaxy. Yeah. She's the one who actually knows what's going on. Now, Leia is absolutely great in the original trilogy in that it's seeds of that are there. But you know, she is also, like, not as elevated as she could be in the original trilogy, right? So there's a part of me where Lucas looking forward and going, you know, I'm going to really take what I believe and take what I put parts of that in the original trilogy, and I'm really going to make that the focus. Leia is going to be the focus. And then I think by saying the real challenge of this time is how do you rebuild a government and make it just, and how do you fight the reemergence of crime and the Sith and do it in a just and inclusive way? Like, let's tackle these big challenges. That ties together what he's interested in the prequels of, like, systems of government, systems of power matter. But then it also kind of ties together the original trilogy where, like, yeah, we are aware of the political reality, but the original trilogy is so focused on the interpersonal dynamics of the rebellion and Vader and the Skywalker family. So to kind of pull all those together and say, Leia is the person who's always been the steadfast hero of the story. So she has to basically, as somebody who is an heir to this mystical heritage of this power of being a Skywalker who is tied to the Force, she has to resolve that for herself in a way that also resolves everything for the galaxy. So it gets away from that criticism that sometimes people have of the original trilogy where, Luke really makes a difference and so does Anakin by, you know, overthrowing the Emperor. But you can also read it as an interpersonal battle of the Skywalker family. And it seems to me this treatment is, what if Leia had to deal with all of her interpersonal drama of the power of being a Skywalker and also take full responsibility for the fate of the galaxy?
Wow. Can we make this? No, I love it. Yeah, because the ideas that are very present and we always joke that some of the Leia's great traits maybe come out of her not being underwritten, but just like you said, not as elevated as she could be in A New Hope specifically. You know, we always go to the putting the blanket over Luke after losing her planet. But that end up spinning off into these just great traits and characteristics of this wonderful character. So to have her kind of have to move all that forward, as Lucas says, this is her rebellion, but now to actually her be at the front and center of all that and then tying into the ideas, it's what I love, what's present in what we do have in this modern era of once those fireworks start blasting off on Endor, like the real work begins and how hard that is. Because on the, I'm not a huge, like I always talk, I don't want Kenobi to fight a bunch of pirates looking for water on Tatooine. Right. You know, like fine, but that's not a big threat to me. Big enough threat. Criminal syndicates on the surface, I'm like, hey, okay, but Sith, you know, the Maul stuff, Sith run criminal syndicates under, you know, undercutting the power. Look even what's going on with Mando out in the Outer Rim of the New Republic. That's very realistic, very much a problem to be dealt with. And then you tie in the dark side through that. Ah, yeah, you got something that Leia's in the right spot to handle.
Yeah, yeah. And it sounds like these ideas might have been more explicit if Lucas had ever, you know, made and told this story. But I do think they're ideas that are present in The Rise of Skywalker, in particular, that Leia is so mindful, and The Last Jedi, that Leia is so mindful of passing on, you know, to the next generation, what she has known. And that idea that really emerges in The Rise of Skywalker is we are not the solution. We are the spark that fires the rest of the galaxy. And it is that spark of hope that Leia keeps alive and trains the next generation to keep alive that bursts into this flame of the entire galaxy showing up to fight this fight for themselves. And I think in The Rise of Skywalker, ultimately, it is a very, it is undeniably a militaristic thing. And it's very interesting to think of George making slightly more political movies and doing that, all those same themes, but having it be told in an almost political story of Leia saying, you, the galaxy, have to rise up and, you know, take responsibility, not just for beating the criminals, not just for beating the bad guys, but for deciding who you want to be and figuring out how can we be truly unified as a people. And that's really interesting to me too, that those themes are there, but maybe they would have been more prequel political, like in this version, this idea.
Yeah. Even just, you know, with the use of Maul or Order 66 things, you know, he's probably coming up with these ideas on set for in Revenge of the Sith, you know, who knows? George is like, yeah, give me my notebook. I got an idea. You're right. This definitely seems like he's answering or continuing conversations he's starting in episodes 1, 2, and 3, which is interesting to me. I think the sequel trilogy is in communication with those movies is kind of what we say. But yeah, to have that kind of pick up and not shy away from it. Not that he shied away from the original trilogy. It was a different time, and I think he wanted to make a movie that stood on its own or whatever you want to say. He got to roll up his sleeves and do really what he wanted with the prequels. And so to have him do that the George way with these characters that we know so well and we grew up with, I would have been intrigued by that. I am intrigued by that.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it is also interesting to know that he would have put our characters through the ringer, right? Because there is that kind of push-pull of one can certainly enjoy the end of Return of the Jedi and the Ewoks are happy and the rebellion won and it's a fairy tale and they all lived happily ever after. And it is nice to know that George is like, no, then they have to form a government, which is actually harder than anything they've ever done before. And Luke has to start a new Jedi order and congratulations, you restored what was there before. Well, you know, per the prequels, there were problems with what was there before. So how are you going to actually make this new thing better? It's interesting to know George had no problem with putting the classic characters through the ringer in their older age.
Yeah. Yeah. That would have been interesting. Let's go to the dark side. Maul, Talon, Maul coming back. We got the famous kind of story of Filoni telling the tale of George coming up to him in the hallways and saying, I got one for you. Maul's back. Go figure it out. I'm sure they had some conversations beyond that because a lot of this seems to come from this article seems to really just mirror and lead to what we get in the Clone Wars and with Maul, including his appearance in Solo, quite frankly, in Crimson Dawn and all that stuff. So let's talk about the Maul of it all, and then that will lead to the Darth Talon of it all. Joseph, what do you think about this Darth Maul use?
Yeah, I love that Filoni story, and I like that the behind-the-scenes truth, if that Filoni story is true, that George Lucas walked up to Dave Filoni and said, somehow, Maul has returned.
Yes.
He's got robot legs. That's it. He's got robot legs. Done. Obviously, there's a little more to it in the story there. I really love that. I love the character of Maul. I love that Lucas was interested in returning to him Probably just because, hey, cool design, but also like, ooh, all the things that have ended up being explored with Maul. What is that to, you know, have been on a track to do something and then be pushed out of it, you know? And I'm interested to see how that would have expressed itself, that it's an interesting political idea to say, well, the Sith tried to, you know, put on the mask of the legitimate government and then do whatever they want. And that worked well for a while. But what if we were more insidious? What if we looked like, you know, legitimate problems, you know, because the way crime presents itself can be complex, right? It can be like, it can be very simple. Like those people kidnap these people for ransom and the kidnappers are clearly bad people. But, you know, with Sith manipulation, you could hide it into like, is there a planet that's impoverished and you get somebody like a Darth Maul or Darth Talon coming along going, well, what if you raided the planet next to you? And then you can get into this moral quagmire very, very quickly, manipulated by the Sith of, but they were starving. What's so wrong? They were just fighting for their own life. That's natural. Like, I think there's really interesting things about, you know, what kind of manipulations would Maul and Talon do as crime lords to undermine the New Republic? That particular idea of that, how would they undermine it more than just, you know, overt crime?
Yeah, and it's I don't know, it just really works. That's part of the reason I just love Solo so much. And it's interesting to me that George, even back then, was like, look, I killed this guy off. Not saying that he thought that I did that wrong, because I think he'd believe that was definitely a valuable part of the story. But the fact that he was always like, if he's sitting around with his notepad right here going, all right, I want to tell 789, I need a new villain. You know what? I had Maul there. What can we do with that? What does that represent? I'm intrigued by that, of just George doesn't create Darth Baddius, you know, he doesn't create something completely new, that he wants to revisit this. And then they do it because they do, maybe it's because they do it so well in Clone Wars, exceeding my expectations. I was like spider leg Maul, get out of here with that. And I think people would agree, it's one of the best things that they did in Clone Wars, and that they spilled it over into Rebels so well, and turned Maul into something completely new. I loved Maul. I had all the Maul action figures. I probably had a Maul thermos or something too back in 99. And I was one of those, they killed the coolest character. You know, I'm so glad I grew up, number one. But two, you know, I get it. But I would, you know, this is just, it's an interesting thought to me to have George go, let me go back to that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think that there would have been a lot of interesting things with Maul's perspective on did that Sith plan that Sidious liked so much, did it work or not, and do I have a different one?
Yeah. Let's talk Darth Talon here. I don't know much about Talon. I knew the name, knew the character, knew the look. You know, she's I even have it on Wikipedia right now, just scrolling through right now. I don't have an opinion either way on Darth Talon. It's interesting. It's keeping in line with George, what he likes to do. I guess the tale is he saw her on the cover of a comic book or something. Was like, oh, that's interesting. Okay. I can work with that. Do you have any Talon hot takes?
I really just don't, honestly, because I haven't read her source material, and yeah, she's a cool looking villain. It's a great aesthetic, but for me, it's all about the ideas, you know. It would be about, what is she in it for? How does her philosophy work with Maul's, you know, is it a story of both her and Maul trying to restart the Sith rule of two, or is it, you know, pulling from, I think, some of her backstory that I read about, of, are they like, there should be as many Sith as possible, you know, power in numbers, you know, so I would only get excited by how she functioned into this story, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Yeah. The aesthetic is there. You know, I did an image search for Darth Talon for a thumbnail. I would not suggest doing that. That goes to different places real fast in your Google search. So it's an interesting, popular character. I mean, a lot of people cosplay as her. So it's intriguing to me. I keep using the word intriguing today. It's my word of the day. But yeah, I'm only excited based on the why, as we know. So I'm with you too on that. I'm just more interested about Maul and Maul's relationship with an apprentice. He's not had the best examples of mentorship. And so what kind of mentor would he be? I think we could guess. But also to see what he tries to do with Ezra, and where he is a little bit in Rebels. I'm not going to say softer Maul, but a broken, defeated Maul, but still vengeance filled. So what would he do with someone under his authority and under his thumb is something I'd be interested in as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so a lot of interest there. I would love to talk about the Luke thing, this idea of him starting the Jedi Order, which of course is great, but finding survivors of Order 66 and also trying to search out, you know, younglings. So I love this picture that Luke is like, I have restarted the Jedi Order. I have 50-year-olds and 3-year-olds and me. Let's go.
I have support staff and the new generation. Yeah.
Yeah. Is that interesting to you? Is that exciting to you? The idea that Luke would very quickly after Return of the Jedi restart the Jedi Order in this version of the legend and find Order 66 survivors?
It is. It is. And it would have been more interesting to me at the time. It's interesting overall. I am trying for the sake of this conversation to separate what I do love and sometimes am wonderfully frustrated by that we don't have a ton of Luke stuff post Return of the Jedi, right? We have a couple comics references, a book that's all legends that may or may not be true. I just love the idea that Luke goes, great, I'm a Jedi. Now I need to figure out what that is. And before I restart anything, I need to go figure out what I'm restarting. And I need to go on a search. And he's on, you know, I'm fascinated by what could be there in terms of that storytelling. So him diving right back in, and I'm not saying George would just have him like dive right, you know, next day. Great. Gather up. Here there's some survivors, but also interesting that, you know, again, we didn't have the chance in the original trilogy when he's making them to reference Order 66, but to have Luke Skywalker in a movie, say around 2007, 2008, 2009, 2010, I don't know, going, hey, Order 66, we need that thing we all just saw in the theaters 5 years ago. I know about it and people survived it and they've been in hiding and it's in line with a lot of the stuff going on now where there's always a Jedi in the corner of the galaxy and we can find them. But Luke was just, he had a destiny that they didn't have. So, or a path that they didn't have. So I like that idea of, it's not like Luke diving right back in. He's got to go find them. So there's adventure. There is seeking. I just think I like the seeking out knowledge more than the actual assets to help him rebuild.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I'm really intrigued by what it could have been. That idea of, well, the original trilogy is restoring what was lost and then having like literal people who lived through what was lost. And would he encounter Jedi who are like, no, we didn't do anything wrong. There were no problems with the Jedi Order. Sidious just got one up on us. Mm-hmm. And let's just go right back to exactly the way things were. Let's retake the temple. Let's go. And or would it be somebody who's like, kid, I know you you went through a journey and you found your Jedi path, but now you're starting an organization that can crumble from the inside. And I know you are on your path, but how can you keep all of us on the path, you know?
Yeah, no, I do know because, yeah, that's, I'm going to say this carefully because I know sometimes I take some big general swipes at Legends stuff. So I apologize to Legends fans, but I started to drop out myself in the mid 90s, with the Jedi Academy stuff. It just wasn't pulling me in. I didn't find it as interesting. And by the way, this was before the prequels came out. So, you know, again, there's probably some specific details that I know I'm not referencing or I know I don't have in my brain. I apologize for that. But the idea of Luke just restarting it business as normal is not interesting to me, but what you're describing, and I think George would, I have a lot of faith that George would not just have Luke go, great, I rented an office and the Jedi Order is back in business, baby. Exact conversations, moments, Jedi that are like, I don't want to be back. I don't want to go back. We fail. Jedi that are like, great, got my saber. Let's go. That is interesting to me. And that is a little bit in line with what I like about the sequel era of him, him seeking knowledge and learning a little bit more about what he is and what they used to be.
Yeah. Yeah. Also very interesting to think at whatever point in time, again, this is a modern interview, but we don't know exactly when Lucas had these ideas. We would assume when Mark Hamill and Carrie Fisher were a little younger, since it's happening so close to Return of the Jedi. But it's interesting that even Lucas would have that like, oh yeah, no, he could find, you know, a handful of Jedi who were just totally hiding through the entire Galactic Civil War. Yeah. That's an interesting dynamic, or to use your word, Ken, intriguing.
Intriguing. I pulled it off the calendar today. Tomorrow is scrumptious. And there's some actual, like, you know, when he's scribbling these notes down, and if he would have tried to make these movies, when do they send him? You couldn't just say it's 5 years after Return of the Jedi, because the performers are not 5 years after Return of the Jedi.
No.
They're younger, like you said. Would Harrison at this point in his career, would he be open to that? I don't know. It was around the time where he was open to going back as Indiana Jones a fourth time. So I think sometimes Harrison can be unfairly categorized as always crusty, and that's not always the case. Most of the time. But it would have been interesting to see. And so would that have forced George to move some of these ideas 20 years after Return of the Jedi? You know, it's a big what if. We'll never know. But yeah, that's different than if he had made these in 97 versus 2007.
Yeah, absolutely. Big absolutely to that.
Yeah, so I'm going over my notes here and seeing if there's anything I felt I missed out of this. Anything, there's a lot in here. There's stuff. Oh, you know what? There's a lot of stuff with Talon that I thought was interesting about maybe a Snoke-like character, and that's definitely not intended to be Snoke, but being tied into her and how there is room for a Snoke and First Order backstory, even now, what we have. So we know Snoke may have had other apprentices, and that doesn't matter, you know, if he's Palpatine's complete puppet or not. You know, we got some of those answers, but we don't know what exactly happened. So how would you feel about some of these elements popping up in other Star Wars stories? The Rey Sloane of it all, the First Order form going up into power, and other apprentices that were either meant to be instead of Ben Solo or until Ben Solo. There's something there I don't mind.
Yeah, yeah. And also just to kind of unpack the Darth Talon, there is some art from Force Awakens, because it seems like in whatever treatment Lucas provided, that she was one of the only elements that survived in his last draft that he handed over to Disney, that she was possibly somebody who was helping to turn Ben to the dark side. And there's some art for that. So it seems like she kind of exists in a couple different possibilities. But to your question, I really think this storytelling is juicy. I think kind of the most exciting thing about this to me is I think some of these stories, there's plenty of room in the modern canon for them to be told. I would love books, animated series probably would be my first vote, of the adventures of Luke and Leia. Like, maybe you got Han, but he's going off and doing racing stuff. But this real focus on Luke and Leia and this story of the prequels were the institutions of the Republic and the Jedi being attacked from within and failing from within. The story of the original trilogy is restoring them. Now, the ultimate story, the ultimate challenge is Luke and Leia wrestling with how to best rebuild them. I think you can still tell that story, and then you get to the story in the sequel trilogy of they built something good, but, you know, darkness fought back, and this new generation had to rise, because that's the thing that is missing, I think, from this treatment that is a very Star Wars, very George Lucas thing, a focus on the new generation. So I feel like that story of Snoke in the First Order and Rey Sloane off in the unknown regions, for sure that. I think individual Luke and Leia working together to start the new Republic, to start the Jedi Order that he does have. I would love that. I'd love some young Ben adventures. I would love, you know, if it is true that Snoke was wounded by Luke, I'd love that story. And I think there's a lot of room to tell them some way, somehow.
Yeah, there is. And you know, we temper our expectations around these parts. It will more than just fill out what we don't know. It just would be, I think, a fun chapter in this kind of in this Star Wars story that we all love. Just these years reestablishing footing and how tough it is. And you talk about rebuilding, but also making better, and how I think Luke probably finally went into, like, I just have the image of Luke going, you know what? Finally ready to start a Jedi Academy. I've got everything down, from the logo and the paper, classes and the planet. That's perfect. I got it all. And what I want to teach, and what I want to kind of get the image, the Jedi in my own image, but, you know, it's not mine. It's what I've discovered. And having that go wrong, it just would add weight to what we what we got going on. And that includes stuff with Leia and the New Republic and just got going a little bit more. So, hey, hopefully one day, and a character like Talon or someone that represents, Talon would work well. And I would love on a big screen, big Star Wars story, a female villain, right? Just someone who's just nasty and evil and Sith-like. We have Ventress. We have a lot of great examples in Star Wars, but on just a big level, I think that would go over well, and it would be fun to get that in a story.
Yes, I would love, a dark side woman, big bad on the big screen would be great. I think the only other thing that I want to say about this and about like other storytelling with Luke and Leia in this era, I think for me, I really interpret what some of the characters said in the sequel trilogy, in particular Luke saying, and for a long time there was peace, meaning that Luke and Leia did a good job. They set up these institutions and they did a good job, and it benefited a lot of people. But, problems arise and they need, to be dealt with again. I think there's just still a lot of room to tell a kind of a triumphant story of Luke and Leia doing a good job setting things up.
Yeah, you know what's funny? You hearing you describe that, it's like, yeah, that it's almost like he's referring to that trilogy.
For a long time, there was peace. Yeah,
yeah. But then we won again, and we were good. We set up the government, we set up the school we wanted, and things were good.
But yeah, And I think a thing for me too is like, remember 2005? Revenge of the Sith comes out. Lucas says on red carpets in interviews, "I did it. I told the whole story. I told the story of Anakin Skywalker's fall and becoming Darth Vader and his redemption." And then moments later, he made the entire Clone Wars, where he added all of this dimension to Anakin Skywalker. And that's the thing that makes me feel like, even with big characters, when we know the end of their story, there's always room to spend more time with them and to add more nuance.
I 100% agree, and I'll say beyond just even characters, but eras and rebellions and wars against the Empire. I think you can always add more to the story to just add weight to everything that we already know. So, yeah, you and I are in agreement on that, and it seems like George, he always loves revisiting his stories.
He does.
So that is the look at that one, but we got a little bit of figure alerts and Mando Monday's merchandise check-in here. Let's go with the figures first. These look great. Ah, man. So Black Series 6-inch figures coming out in the spring 2021. Here's what we got, Joseph. Asajj Ventress. Moff Gideon. Greed Karga. Mando. Quill. And then Crosshair and Hunter. We got some Bad Batch coming. Then we got a new vintage figure. This is the 3¾ collection. Something close to your heart. We got Snaggletooth himself, Zutton, in his little half robe, his little bathrobe there. What do you think about these figures? And I'm especially interested in your thoughts on the Bad Batch rolling out.
Oh, yeah. No, this is great. This is a threat to my wall space. This is a threat to my corkboard already filling up. Zutton, that's so great. They haven't made a figure of him in a long time. I was reading and I have such affinity for him, being one of the four cantina creatures back in the Kenner days. Quill, I just want more Quill merchandise everywhere. So that's I'm really excited about Quill. Really excited about Ventress. That's a great figure. The Crosshair and Hunter, that just, I don't know, that kind of, it fires my excitement because we aren't talking in the general Star Wars community about Bad Batch coming, and knowing that it is coming and kind of wondering how that's going to add to the whole story. Just being reminded of like the Bad Batch is coming, not only in action figure form, but in television form is exciting.
I'm right there with you. It's weird when sometimes this news, the figure news seems to roll in and so many different spots. I follow Jedi Business on Instagram. Fly Guy? I'll see a picture and be like, what is this? Then I can't even find the news story sometimes. Or our wonderful listeners in our Force Center Discord community will post a picture and I'll be like, where is the actual news story about what figures they're real? And I had to track it down. And so I saw Crosshair and Hunter. It probably was Crosshair first. And I didn't know. I literally went, what is that? Is that some Purge Trooper I didn't know about? I had a clip. Oh, yeah, that's clones. It's Bad Batch. And this is something that's fresh in my mind, season 7 of Clone Wars. I know the show's coming, but you're right, Joseph. We aren't talking about it. That's not a good or bad thing. It's just a thing. And I did look and go, oh, yeah. Give me these figures. I think I like them more than I thought. And And we always kept saying they're kind of like a G.I. Joe squad, the G.I. Joe collector and me from the 80s is like, oh, yeah, different kind of clones. I like this. So interesting observation.
Yeah, I hope that they eventually get not only these great Black Series, but some a four-pack vintage figure of the whole Bad Batch. Five-pack with Echo, damn it.
Oh, yeah, you got to include Echo in there. So, yeah, those are coming on out there. I love, you know, I threw in the Snaggletooth because, again, that's what we knew. That's what we knew. But I just love kind of revisiting those characters and you being a fan of the vintage. Not to get too deep on it there, Justin, but to see these characters, to see them in the modern era and repackaged and looking so great, that's got to make the inner kid very happy, right?
Oh, yeah, very much so. And it's just part of the fun, weird legacy of Star Wars, of this very minor background character still resonating to the point where it's like, announcement on the internet. New, incredibly detailed action figure of a very small background character from a film in 1977. It's just the weirdness of Star Wars, and I love it.
And I'm very happy Zutton has a name, but, you know, again, I grew up calling him Snaggletooth, so, and I love kind of that spirit paying homage to that kind of time in our Star Wars fandoms, with even some of the stuff on Mandalorian with some of the character names. All right. Speaking of Mando Monday, so they did the Mando download. You got the character posters. A lot of people excited, as they should be, for Bo-Katan, Costa Reeves, Axe Wovis. Great hero shots there. I like the little concept one they released of Baby Yoda trying in vain to eat an octopus chowder bowl octopus. Any favorites for you in this batch?
Oh, yeah. I liked the weird woodcut of the sign of Pelimoto's Docking Bay 35. I don't have room physically for all these things, but I love some things that go beyond toys or clothes to things that are just like, hey, buy this actual thing from the world, you know?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. As I've gotten older, I don't know if that's all right, if that makes sense. But yeah, it's a little less of the packages and the toys, though. I mean, look, I see this Quill and this Moff Gideon. I'm like, yep, we're going to have to get that. Just like I have to get the Jar Jar and the Ventress and all those other ones. But yeah, I would hang that. That's a great, put that in my kitchen.
Kitchen Bay 35. When you're in there making anything but clam chowder.
Yeah. The final one I want to talk to you about here is this 24 inches tall cuddle plush by Mattel of the child, cuddling a space frog.
Mm-hmm.
We know he's going to eat. Unless this is him now post hanging out with the frog family, where he has a new appreciation for life and has gone veggie. What do you think? I'm looking at it now. It's adorable. He's going to kill that thing.
Yeah. I mean, I honestly just looked at it and I shook my head and went, here. Well, the whole frog thing, like the Black Series child comes with the frog and the ball. The ball is tiny. I'm afraid that I'm gonna accidentally choke on it. And I'm older than 3 years old. I think there is just I think that the child merch era that we're living in is really great, because I think it is so foot on the gas, anything child, the same way that Phantom Menace kind of did with Jar Jar, that there's gonna be some like weird we look back and go, they made a what of the child? Doing what? With who?
Do we have a child, Pez dispenser that's like little frog shaped?
I really want that. I want some weird, the child Pez dispenser.
That's awesome. So there you go. Mando Mondays, just another Mando Monday. A lot of plushes, some shirts, some jammies, and more than any other week, figures. Cool figures of cool characters, and that's part of being a Star Wars fan, is getting those figures. So that is our look at Star Wars news. We're going to take a quick break, a reset. Before we do, though, we got our audiobook recommendation for you all. Joseph?
Yeah, we are going to be discussing this one soon. It is a big one. There's a lot to discuss in it. So we are recommending the new From a Certain Point of View Empire Strikes Back book. Many different stories, many different points of view.
Yes, it is on our review list. So catch up, get ready. As Joseph said, download your free audiobook today at audibletrial.com/4Center. Again, that's audibletrial.com/4Center for your free audiobook. We'll take a quick break. On the other side of this break, your questions and more here on 4Center.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, 4Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, 4Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars-loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to JennyLanda.com, that's JennyLanda.com, for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as JenniferLanda1138.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Four Center, the 271st episode of the main show, the big show, the superstar destroyer of our fleet. It still exists. It's just now two superstar destroyers. News and cues. And then, of course, the deep dives on Thursday. We got a cool one coming this Thursday on the lightsaber collection, Joseph. But right now we're going to look at questions. But even before that, we have something special here, something a little different that we're
Yeah, that's right. So every once in a while, we've been doing a show called Favorite Points of View, and I put out a call to people, to listeners, to share their favorite of something. I did one about lightsabers, did one about bounty hunters. A little while back, you and I, Ken, did one together where we asked people for the most relatable character in Star Wars. And this entry came in after we recorded, but I really wanted to share it because it's very deep, it's very personal, it's very moving, and I just really wanted to share it. So this was sent in response to the question, who is the most relatable character in Star Wars to you, however you choose to define that for yourself? And we got this great response from Mac. Mac says, I would honestly have to say Ben Solo. While there are some pretty remarkable differences, most notably the extremes, as I have not been a fan of nor supported genocide, I do relate to some of the broader strokes in relation to his character. I had parents who weren't around much and was kind of a loner. A time came when I truly felt like I was on my own, and I decided I was willing to go to any lengths to fit in and feel a part of something, regardless of what that was. In a sense, I did turn to the dark side, with mine being drugs. I started running with a really bad crowd and felt like they really liked me and that I had finally found real friends, only to later realize they were just using me because they could get something out of me. I spent years in and out of rehabs, and like Ben slash Kylo, I was terrified of coming out of the shadows because then I would have to answer for and face the repercussions of all the bad things I had done. I decided I would rather go further down the rabbit hole for things to only get darker and darker. I felt like I was finally in control of something when in fact I was being completely manipulated and used, in my case, from the disease of addiction. Early last year, I was homeless for a brief period, and one morning I saw the sun rise over the empty storage locker where I was sleeping, and out of nowhere, the cobwebs cleared, and I finally had a moment of clarity. I wasn't a through-and-through horrible person. Yes, I had done bad things to the people who cared about me. Nothing remotely close to Kylo with Han, thankfully. But it wasn't too late to do the right thing. I realized that by helping another person with my same struggles, I could have a truly positive impact in the world and make a difference, even if it was only one person. I know a lot of people didn't like it, but personally, I loved that Ben got redeemed at the end of The Rise of Skywalker, because I feel like Star Wars has always been about inspiring hope. I feel like the idea of it's never too late to do the right thing is something that cannot be overstated in this world, and for that reason, watching his arc across the new trilogy is something that will always resonate with me, and he is truly my favorite character in all of Star Wars. I know this is probably kind of dark and may not be usable, says Mac, but just figured I would offer my own personal experience. Above all else, I want you guys to know that Force Center and the Force Center community are something that will always hold a special place in my heart, because even when things were grim, I still love Star Wars. I'm now 18 months clean, and you guys are a huge part of keeping me sane, especially on my rough days. Big love, Mac. Ken, what are your reactions?
Well, you send the notes Sunday, right? I read this and I got tears in my eyes, Mac. I was moved by this story. I love being part of Star Wars, and to hear this story today, and this was sent probably a bit ago, but to hear it now. No worry about the details, but just, Star Wars fandom can sometimes be exhausting or painful or tough or confusing, or, sometimes you're like, man, why do I even invest in this? The fandom's rough right now, right? I love hearing this stuff because it goes to why you and I come back each week, Joseph, to a podcast and talk about this thing we love. It's why we keep going back to these stories. If you're a fan, and you might be a surface Star Wars fan, but not a problem. You might be diehard casual fan, as I call it, not a problem. But Star Wars as designed is this. This is not necessarily what George Lucas was trying to do in 1973 on a pad of paper when he couldn't get the rights to Flash Gordon. But in a way, to me, Joseph, it is. It is. He wanted to tell a story that wasn't about the facts and the details. That was the spice, that was the frosting, as we always say, but it was lessons. It was comfort. It was guidance for everyone at any point in your life. And Star Wars, I think, matures with you. It grows with you, and it hits you right when you need it. And this was a powerful reminder of why I keep coming back to these parts.
Yeah, it's extremely well said by you, Ken. Extremely well said by Mac. I think for me, it's really powerful. I wanted to be sure to share it because I think it is powerful that that connection was made between our space opera and somebody's real life in such a profound way. And it was so powerful of Mac to share that. And I think for me, it is a great reminder of what you're saying of there are so many levels on which to love Star Wars. It can be just a fun escapism thing that you pop in. You can celebrate the utter silliness of it. I absolutely love Lulilo Primock, Vat Weirdo, and upside down frogs crooning old space tunes. It's so silly. It's so weird. It's so delightful. But underneath all of that is something that is truly profound and can be truly profound. And for me, it is really centering to know that there are levels at which we can discuss and levels at which we can experience Star Wars. And we can say like, oh, let's have kind of an academic back and forth, you know, the structure of the sequel trilogy. Was this handled the best it could? What about it from this perspective? And we can really debate all that. And none of that can ever change the fact that this is a piece of art that spoke to someone like Mac on such a deep and profound level. And I think for myself, I enjoy all sorts of Star Wars discussion, but this is to me like the most powerful and the thing that I always try to remember. And it's been so great from people like Mac and many others who shared really heartfelt, really true things about how much Star Wars has helped them when they truly needed help. And that is a part of the community, a part of the stories that I always want to make kind of like the most important in my heart.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Put that number one in the depth chart of reasons to love. Yeah. You know, and I am moved also by Mac finding importance and taking solace and maybe even learning or getting insight from the mistakes of a character and where it goes wrong. And I sometimes get a maybe even obsessed with that. And just like, sometimes you can see yourself in something and what's on screen is supposed to be bad or supposed to be the thought or the process or the path that's not the best choice. And then by seeing that and seeing what that character does, or just seeing it, just seeing the stuff he's talking about up top, maybe something that I haven't specifically felt with, but just, you know, I'm imagining Kylo Ren being like, I finally found some friends, and falling for that. And I don't mean that lightly, but just like looking around at Hux and all these people like, oh, I'm finally home. I'm not. Oh gosh, but I can't see it. I can't face it. Or I don't want to face it yet. That's also part of the power of the storytelling too.
So yeah.
Even beyond the actions, because Kylo does bad things. Anakin does bad things. That's why I can totally get into the debates of like you said, the intellectual conversations are with me, the pseudo intellectual conversations about Anakin and what he did and killing kids and all those kind of things. Yep, it's on screen, but nothing should take away from the lesson of Anakin and Kylo of you can turn back. The choice is always there. It's hard. It's not easy, but it's there. I love that. I love that about Star Wars storytelling.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think Star Wars storytelling is heightened. It is operatic, particularly the Skywalker saga, big films on the big screens. But I find Kylo's journey really powerful. That moment in Rise of Skywalker where he thinks he's got Rey beat because he thinks she's failed Leia and, admits, you know, that now you can't go back to her, just like I can't. And realizing that he's come to this place, like that connects to times like Mac is talking about, of really challenging times. But also for me, that it just connects viscerally to like times when I'm angry and I've said something to somebody I care about that I don't feel great about. And that feeling like I could apologize, but it's scary. It's so scary to try to turn around and do the right thing, you know, and that is just, it's so powerful. And it's so great of Mac to capture that in such an eloquent way.
Yeah. Big love to you, Mac. Takes some strength to maybe share some raw stuff here on a, on a podcast in a galaxy far, far away. But man, it really did move me, and it moves me now, and I appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you. Big thanks. And with that, I think we're going to move on to some audience questions, huh?
Absolutely.
All right, here we go. We always take questions from Twitter and Patreon. Our first questions are from Twitter. We got one from Nick Field. Nick says, many fans cite Rogue One as their favorite film of the Disney era, yet the Cassian Andor show seems to be the least anticipated upcoming Disney Plus series. I find this discrepancy fascinating. What would you attribute it to? What are your thoughts, Ken?
This is a great question, Nick. I guess fascinating is the word I should choose to use. I find it frustrating at times, but... But that's the thing. Look, there's just a large people fan who just generally they want something completely different in their Star Wars storytelling. And maybe they did love Rogue One. Maybe they love Cassian Andor and they love Diego Luna as Cassian Andor. But hey, I'd rather go 200 years before. I'd rather go 200 years in the future. I'd rather go a planet over where I haven't heard a story before. So I just want to acknowledge like that is totally understandable and something I kind of want as well, too. And I don't want to take anyone away from that in anything I say or I'm about to say. I do, though, sometimes feel there's a little bit of just a tidal wave of narrative that can sweep across the land. And it becomes somewhat of a trendy answer to say, oh, creatively bankrupt. They're just going to character ideas and eras that they already been, you know, and that's where I start getting a little frustrated. Because I think, you know, I just think you're lacking some foresight to seeing what this could really be. Some of the stuff that you and I were talking about in this episode of just going back, you know, again, Lucas, I told my story, but you know what? I didn't really tell all the story in every corner and how it all funnels and fuels the main saga story. So that's why I'm fascinated by the Cassian series. I know a lot of people are, but yeah, it is a split. I don't know. It just might be that, hey, we already saw it. I loved it. Don't want to revisit it. And that's fair.
Yeah. Yeah. It might definitely be that of the people who are really in the Star Wars bubble and paying a ton of attention are just like, I'm not excited for that one. I can't see it. I don't get it. Bad Batch obviously is an upcoming show where we saw the characters very recently. Kenobi that's huge. Ewan McGregor returning is huge. Mando is going on right now, right this moment. Both the Leslie Headland in the Taika Waititi film is that sort of promise of like what is really turning the page, what is next as we get away from familiar characters. So I think maybe it's just a little lost in the mix. I think there's a little bit of just out of sight, out of mind myself. And this is a prediction in which if I were betting, I could lose a lot of money because I could be entirely wrong. But my personal reading of the tea leaves of what this show is going to be, I think when the first article in particular, when the first trailer comes out, I think people are going to be all on board. I think people are going to be extremely excited. If the show is what I think it is, and the trailer communicates that this is a spy thriller, this is, you know, a spy thriller that has all of that kind of spy action, espionage action, but also has the morality of is what I'm doing, is it okay? Is it worth it for the final goal? I think that feeling of Jason Bourne, that feeling of the Americans, a Tinker Tailor soldier spy, but in space. I think when that is communicated to people, you know, article in a trailer really, really well, particularly in a trailer, I think the, oh, that is actually fresher than I was thinking is going to land hard and people are going to get real excited.
Yeah. I hope. And look, you and I, you're right. We don't know. We have an idea from what we're just seeing of who's attached and what has been described. We don't know, man. I don't got these scripts on my desk. Do you? I don't know. Well, maybe ask a scooper. We don't know. But I think it is not just a story of the rebellion against the Empire. It is what you're saying. It is a different kind of look at before it exploded into all-out war and the pressures, the risks, the importance, the stakes with intrigue and espionage, you know. I'm excited. I know other people might not be, but maybe. I'm hoping you're right, Joseph. I'll put some chips down on the table with you.
Yeah, I think people love K2SO too. I think they love K2SO. I think I've heard mostly, I don't think I've ever heard anything negative about Diego Luna or the character of Cassian Andor. I get if people are like, fine, but I'm not intrigued. But I think there is a real love for those characters, K2SO in particular. So seeing that character, and I think seeing that story of, we've seen the story of wars, we've seen the story of rebellion, but if Cassian's story is, I grew up as a separatist and I was already fighting against what I thought was unjust in the Republic, and so was my family, and then that morphed into the Empire, and I have never had a choice but to fight. That's been my entire life. That's interesting, and I think it might hook people.
I hope so. I hope so.
Yeah. Great question, Nick. So we're going to move on to our next question from Anthony Poirier. Anthony says, do you think Luke and Ahsoka ever met? I can see the possibility where she'd seek him out, but never actually meet, or she could actively try to avoid him. Or maybe they just comically keep missing each other. But here in the Outer Regions on Mando opens up, but her in the Outer Regions on Mando opens up a possibility. Thanks. Again, this is some Mando spoiler territory here. And I figured this is one of the last times we are maybe able to take a question like that. Who knows? We'll see. But I've been seeing lots of discussion about that. Of what would their relationship be? Would they want one? What are your thoughts?
Well, I think I'm now in the camp that they did meet, and it would be around this time in the storyline. This time being the Mando time, 5 years after or so. I do have some apprehension. I think you share it too, but I don't want to speak to you. Just like if she, where she was during the Galactic Civil War is important to me, just in terms of lore and canon stuff. Not always why I come to the party, but that's something I do keep in mind all the time. So her showing up to the New Hope and not getting involved, or not hearing about it, I'm open to it, because just her presence in the Clone Wars was questioned, and it worked out quite all right for my money. So where she is during the Galactic Civil War is important, because again, the Death Star blows up. I can't imagine the Ahsoka Tano we know sitting anywhere in the galaxy, if she's found Ezra and her and Sabine and Ezra are having a dinner and they're like, hey, the Death Star blew up. Wonder what happened with that. I can't imagine her not getting involved, right? Like, she's not just a Jedi that survived Order 66 and is in hiding. Even though she might be in some sort of hiding. I get it. She was Fulcrum. She's part of the fight. So she leaves to go deal with the Ezra stuff. I got to imagine she will get involved. So now I'm intrigued more of her showing up after and being like, hey, who are you? Let's talk. Because imagine the conversations they could have about what it means to be a Jedi.
Yeah. And there's with Rebels, there's that coda that is after Return of the Jedi, and it's a little bit ambiguous what Ahsoka's deal is there with where she was during the Galactic Civil War. So I think when I approach this question, it is really about, like, the Galactic Civil War has happened. It's ended. And Luke has emerged as the next Jedi, the holder of the flame. And then what happens? And for me, I think about it from both Luke and Ahsoka's perspective. What we know of Luke's canon is that he wants as much information. He wants knowledge. He wants mastery. He doesn't, he's not just looking for knickknacks, right? He wants to understand the full mystery of the Force. So I can't imagine that he wouldn't seek out somebody that he knows to have knowledge, if he is aware of this person who is, alive and now and was alive during the fall of the old order of the Jedi. Of course he would want to know. And I feel like we don't know what's happened with Ahsoka, exactly during the Galactic Civil War. We don't know exactly what happened, if she did go search with Ezra and Sabine for Ezra in Purgletown, Purgatory, whatever. We don't know where she's been at. I feel like one of the things that is great about Ahsoka's character is that she is a steadfast character like Leia. Once she finds her sense of justice and her sense of the light side of the Force, that's not a path she's going to abandon. So I think by the time all this has happened, the Jedi Order has long fallen. The Empire has fallen. I don't think she's walking around with some huge chip on her shoulder about the Jedi, right? I think for her, it's probably more like labels and names only matter so much. What matters is your actions. And why should we, would she not want to hear the story of what actually happened with the son of Anakin and what actually happened in Anakin's final moments? You know, why should we, why would she not want that part of the story to be filled in for her? I just kind of feel like they have a lot to share with one another. Like they have the, you know, these two important halves of Anakin's journey that they can really gift one another, you know?
Ooh, that's a great way to phrase it. And now that campfire conversation becomes tremendously emotional, right?
Yeah. Then,
like Luke saying, yeah, let me tell you about his final moments. Let me tell you what happened. Yeah, that would be pretty powerful to experience, to read, see, watch. I don't know. But yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah. Great. I think someday we'll get it. And I think it will be partially about that. You know, let me tell you who he was before he fell, and let me tell you who he was, you know, when he returned conversation. And then maybe, yeah, I might get into like the Luke's like, I'm restarting the Jedi Order. And she's like, okay, here's my list of what not to do. Like maybe then you might get into it, into all of that, you know. But I think they're in this really interesting place of both saying, we've found our Jedi path. We know what we think it is to serve the light side of the Force. Now, how do we institutionalize that and not lose that spirit? Some of the things we were talking about earlier in the episode, I think they'd both have opinions on.
Absolutely. Around the Campfire with Luke and Ahsoka, coming to Disney Plus.
Excellent. 8 hours of conversation, I'd be just fine with. Moving on to our questions from Patreon. We got one from Andrew McNabb. Andrew's got a scenario for us, Ken. Here's the scenario. Dex's Diner has just announced they are offering booth dedications. All your life days have come at once. Your name on a plaque, on a seat for eternity. Alas, you don't have enough credits. Assemble a crack team for an Ocean's 11 style heist to rob an evil casino of the much needed funds. Using Star Wars characters galaxy wide, you will need the charming smooth talker, the muscle, the getaway, the gadgeteer, the thief, and the strategist. Put on some light space jazz and choose wisely. So, Ken, did you make some wise choices?
I hope so. It's funny, Andrew. It's funny. I know there's, you know, two versions of Ocean's 11. There's the Rat Pack version, and then the, what was it, 2001 Soderbergh version. And I am one of those folks, and I'll even say it, I am one of those guys that loves Ocean 11. 12 and 13, Ocean's 11, I just, at the end of the film, I get emotional when they're looking at the Bellagio. It's cliche. I'm sorry. I'm just one of those guys. I love it. I love this film. And I watched it again 3 nights ago while I was doing some work. I was going to put on a Star Wars. There's a Monty Python documentary I'm trying to watch on Netflix, but I can't have it on in the background. I want to pay attention to it because I just, I'm so influenced by Monty Python. So I was like, oh, Ocean's 11. So Andrew, perfectly timed. I don't know. What do you want to do? You want to go one by one here, or do you just want to name our teams here?
Justin? Let's just name our teams. You know what? I'll go first and let you do the big finish up. How about that?
I don't know if my answers are worthy, but I'll play the game.
Okay, sounds good. I'm also a big fan of the original Ocean's 11 and the new one. You know, the almost 20-year-old new one.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right.
I say, all right. So this was fun. You know, sometimes when we get questions like this, I really go on that deep dive. Like, I'm going to come up with three. I'm going to find some obscure characters. I just went fast and intuitive with my Star Wars gut, and this is what came out. My charming smooth talker is Obi-Wan Kenobi. Come on. Ooh. He's the negotiator. He likes to drink tea with people. He likes to flirt. He's my charming smooth talker. The muscle, this was just immediate because I've been seeing a lot of this muscle. Din Djarin. Din Djarin can take out any problems, right? No problem. He's muscle. The getaway, perhaps controversial, Anakin Skywalker. You know, Han Solo, great pilot, many other great pilots in the galaxy, but Anakin loves flying and does not mind doing some weird things to get away. Gadgeteer, that's got to be Babu Frick. Come on.
I didn't even think about that.
There is a risk when you're trying to do a stealthy heist that he can't be screaming, hey, hey, all the time. So that might not be great. The thief, you know, I did go through a couple options, but the thief, the one that came down to me is just in my gut, R2-D2. R2-D2 does a lot of things where nobody suspects that anything is amiss because what? It's just another astromech droid. He flies under the radar and he is, you know, of Star Wars characters, we've actually seen him steal a lot of things. He's certainly stolen a lot of data, and he tried to steal, he prevented Yoda from stealing the lamp. So there's that. But I think he'd be a good little thief. He's got all those appendages. Who knows what he can do? Finally, strategist. Again, a lot of great options, but I went with Padme. Padme is one of the people that we have actually seen on screen straight up strategize in terms of the fight to retake Theed in The Phantom Menace. And in I love Padme's role in the prequel trilogy, in that many things would go better if everyone would just listen to exactly what Padme said. And I think you want that out of a strategist.
That's great. Okay. Woo. This is always fun. These are fun, Andrew, but also then you feel like you're disrespecting a character if you didn't pick them. You know, they're so. All right. Well, we didn't have any crossover.
We had no crossover. Wow. That's awesome.
And I kind of, you did the same thing I went down the list, Charming Smooth Talker. What comes to mind? Muscle. What comes to mind? And then work from there. So Smooth Talker, actually, I'm going to start here. Not on my list at any one of these is Dr. Aphra, but I tried every time. But Aphra's her own brand. She is a strategist, but she's also flies by the seat of her pants. She's a smooth talker. She's also very, very puts her foot in her mouth and gets in a lot of trouble. She's her own muscle, but she relies on others. She can get away. You know, yeah, I went down the list, but
she's
love
actually like all of these, right?
Yeah. Aphra's her own team, and it sometimes works out, sometimes doesn't. So I wanted to acknowledge that because I was like, ooh, she'd be perfect, but she's almost her own thing. So smooth talker. I went with Poe Dameron. You know, that lip bite on the, you know, will get anyone to take their jacket off to get into a building there. I'm going over and looking at Clooney as Danny Ocean and just working his way around a lot of he's got the security guard getting him access to the blueprint room. He's got this and that. He knows the muscle that's going to beat him up and everything. So I went with Poe Dameron. The muscle, though, I did go with Black Chrysanthemum. Crew. I do really love Black Chrysanthemum. I think he's an interesting character to me. I always thought Chewie, but Chrysanthemum's got a little less moral fiber than Chewie.
A lot less.
And so he might do some things that we need. The getaway, I went with Hera.
Ooh. Because
Hera, other than just being a great pilot and everything, is often in Rebels the getaway.
She literally is. Yeah, we've seen her do this.
Yeah, it is. She's good at this. So I'm with that. The Gadgeteer, Babu Frick, by the way. I can't believe I didn't think about that. Gadgeteer, I went with Peekba.
Ooh.
From Last Shot, she's an Ewok who went off world and chose her own path. And I think she knows a lot. She's a tech genius indeed. And I'm going with Peekba for this one here. I'm going to call it the Jennifer Landa honorable pick there.
That's a good deep cut as things go.
Yeah, Thief, Arch is a great answer. I went with Ezra. Mm-hmm. I went with Ezra because when we first meet him, it's kind of his life. And he reminds me a little bit of Matt Damon's Linus character who's just going to, you know, be on a subway pickpocketing until he's called to a bigger cause. I'm going with Ezra Bridger. Strategist, you're right. A ton of choices. I went a little old school. I went Crix Madine.
Oh.
If he can plan the Battle of Endor and have a lot to do with that, he can take his little pointer and his beard, and he can plan this strategy for our heist here.
Yeah, if your action figure comes with a pointer, then you are a good strategist.
And you're good for a casino robbery.
You're good for a casino robbery. We're looking for a strategist. Do you know anybody with a stick to point at things?
We need to point. So, yeah, wow, that's my list. Andrew, that's fun. That was a lot of fun.
That was a fun one. Very, very good. We love talking the fun stuff as well as the deep stuff. Moving on to our final question, Will Culbertson asks, I want to dig into one specific moment from Attack of the Clones. During the chase sequence on Coruscant, we get this bit of banter between Obi-Wan and Anakin. Obi-Wan, if you spend as much time practicing your saber techniques as you did your wit, you'd rival Master Yoda as a swordsman. Anakin, I thought I already did. Obi-Wan, only in your mind, my very young apprentice. Will's question. Do you think that Anakin, in all his hubris, actually believes that he rivals Yoda as a swordsman, or is he just playfully trolling Obi-Wan the way a younger brother might an older brother? My take on the moment bounces back and forth depending on the viewing, so I'd love to hear your perspectives as well. Thanks. So what do you think, Ken? Does Anakin actually believe he rivals Master Yoda in his skills with a lightsaber, or is he just being cocky?
I think he, all of it, actually, I think he is. I think he does believe it. But he believes it at this point in the story. I think he believes it in the sense of he's heard people say he's good. He knows Yoda's probably better. He knows it. He feels it. But he knows deep down, I'm going to surpass him. Or if really it comes down to it, I know I got the skills. He's just not focused on it. And it's fun now. I think at some point in his life, in his career, Anakin starts to believe his own hype. And that's part of the downfall.
Yeah. I think this moment is really great because I think it is kind of both. I think it is, you know, he's 19, but he's still, I think, in the movie very much in those teen years of stepping into your own power where you are recognizing how powerful you are. But he has all these very specific moments of teen angst of how he's being held back and how he really appreciates and respects Obi-Wan. But actually, Obi-Wan's the problem with everything in his life, you know, and he does kind of go back and forth on where he's at in, I think, a way that is very relatable to all of us who have been teens. So I think this is a real teen moment of like, yeah, when I'm just fighting in the lightsaber room, yeah, I can rival him. I know very little about the actual costs and stakes and reasons for a lightsaber fight. So I think this is kind of, I love that this line is a direct setup for Yoda's fight later in the film, that revelation in 2002. But I like thinking about it, which I never have until we'll ask this fun question of a setup for Anakin's failure in that same lightsaber fight of like, well, we got the answer. He's not. He doesn't rival Yoda yet. So I kind of like thinking of it as both of like that moment when you're a teen and you're cocky of like, yeah, I can do anything. Oh, no, something bad happened and everything fell apart.
That, sir, is a great way to wrap it all up. You're right. You forget maybe over years of watching this movie, this sequence is in the same movie that we get Yoda fighting Dooku and Anakin not winning over Dooku. Oh, yeah, that's great.
Yep. Some questions answered there, both in the film and here on the podcast. Great questions. Thank you, Will. Thank you, Andrew. Thank you, Anthony. Thank you, Nick. Always excited to tackle questions, and I'm excited to dig up more for next week. Oh, I did want to say a thing about questions. If you're wanting to ask a question on Twitter, it's one extra step, but it's the best way to get to us. Like every month or so, maybe every 6 weeks, I will put out a tweet requesting questions. Because it's really hard to keep up with them when they just kind of come in on a random day, and I'm doing other things too. So if you really want to be sure to get us to see a question, the best thing to do is to go on Twitter and then just like click our profile and just scan down to the tweets, and then you'll see the one. I usually say briefing time. When you see the one that says briefing time, ask a question there. That's the best way to make sure that we see it. I tried to find them everywhere, but it's a lot to keep track of.
It is. It is a lot to keep track of. So there you go. Listen to the man, my friends. Listen to what the man said. What a great episode today. What a fun episode, Jesse.
I had fun.
Yeah. A bit of you were like, no.
No. It was great fun. It's a really great mix this week with some really thoughtful, really deep stuff and some really fun stuff. And that is everything that Star Wars can be.
Indeed. And we are clinking glasses here at the end of our session at the Star Wars podcast bar. And I enjoy it all the time. Hey, we're almost out of here, but I want to tell you where you can find us on Twitter at Force Center Pod. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. We are on Instagram, YouTube, subscribe over there. Podcasts available a lot of different spots like Anchor, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Google Podcasts, Amazon Music for podcasts as well. Merch available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. We are on Patreon. Patreon.com/ForceCenter is where you can support the show, help us grow, and reach some of our goals. You can follow me at KatNapsuck or go to KatNapsuck.com for information on all the things I do. Up top, I tease something, some announcements shortly on some more things I'll be working on, because what I need more of is less free time. We always highlight charities that are close to our heart, or even in this particular case, close to a longtime listener, Kai Thatch. We love having Kai around these parts. Always has some great questions, and he long ago for even over my regular Patreon page, nominated this charity, Hope for the Warriors. HopeForTheWarriors.org is a group founded by U.S. combat veterans and their families with the goal to help all that are affected by military service, particularly during the difficult transitions into civilian life. You can use the volunteer hub on the Hope for the Warriors website to find opportunities near you. They also have virtual volunteer opportunities as well. And you can go make donations or get involved at hopeforthewarriors.org. Thanks, Kai, for recommending that one.
That's great. Yeah, I'm going to echo that one. I think that is really important. And I think it's really great that you highlighted that so well, Ken. For myself, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Joseph Scrimshaw, and you can check out my website, josephscrimshaw.com, for all my other comedy adventures.
Comedy adventures are a fun thing. Hey, that is it for this week. Big lightsaber collection conversation on Thursday. More Mando Star Wars ranked. We've got a lot of things coming your way, and we're happy to have you here with us on Force Center.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
A little something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional, unprofessional. So if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.